This is Adam Francis, and you're listening to the Equipped Indoor Podcast on the E2E Radio Network. Stand by for a great show. Hey, guys, we're back. The Equipped Indoor Podcast, starting a brand new season, Season 5, Episode 1. And we've had a little hiatus for a while, and we're back from vacations, from Blade Show, from moving, from some business developments, and it has been a crazy, hectic couple of weeks. And, of course, on the podcast, I got Mr. Robert Oliver. Robbie, how are you, sir?
I'm lovely.
You want a glass of water? Get this guy a glass of water. And, of course, Dan Eastland. Dan.
Man, I'm concerned.
Why is that?
I go to the woods for a little while, and I come back.
Oh,
apparently, y'all have all lost your damn mind.
You won. So why do we lose? Why we lose our damn mind, Dan?
I'm still trying to figure it out, but I come back and man, it's nothing but rainbow flags and Confederate battle flags and emotional distress and offense. I'm not sure what's going on, but I'm ready to go back to the woods.
Well, have you heard about this Trans-Pacific trade deal thing that's going on? You haven't really heard of it because nobody's paying attention to it, but it's actually some crazy stuff. Because all this other stuff is distraction. So.
Yeah, I really don't want to get into that deep a conversation on my first podcast back. But, yes, I had heard about it before I left and the concern that somewhere between a bad deal and nobody knows what's in it.
Yeah,
and then I come back and find out that the administration's gotten fast-track authority.
Yep. That's
But
that's
hell, crazy. You know, with an economy like ours, why not let's just make some risky bad decisions?
It's a world economy now, apparently. So,
all right. Let's not kill my first podcast back.
Well, I felt that you red-blooded Southerners who always call me a Yankee would want to talk about the Confederate flag thing or the Virginia battle flag as it is.
Yeah. You know. It's just so damn stupid.
Here's the funny thing, right? And I'm gonna prime this because Robbie will probably go crazy.
I think Robbie and I are both about to surprise you.
Maybe. Well, I mean, I've heard the thing about how the flag didn't get popular again until the '60s during the civil rights movement to like go against segregation and everything. That's like the true history behind the recent whatever. But my question is that if we have to have a re-education of that. And like people have to tell us what happened, 60 years ago, then it probably doesn't have the same meaning it does today. And I'll say, kind of like the swastika, which was a Buddhist symbol of peace, doesn't have the same meaning that it did when the Buddhists were using it, however many hundreds of years ago. Symbols change and meanings change and whatever. But I do think it's just a pandering distraction to real issues. But what do you guys think?
Here's what I think. Free speech or not free speech? And this story. My family's been Southern longer than this country's been a country, and I don't think I own anything with a Confederate battle flag on it. Mm-hmm. But the only legal, reasonable question is it free speech? Is it protected under free speech or not?
Yeah, that's a very good point.
That's the end of the whole conversation.
Amen.
Robert. Well, actually, I will also add that a private company can choose to do business however they want. If Amazon doesn't want to sell anything with battle flags on it, it's a privately held company. They can do whatever the hell they want.
I agree with that as well.
Now, let's talk about some interesting shit, like killing things.
Robbie doesn't even want to entertain this conversation whatsoever.
What's the conversation?
Adam wants us to go all nuts and say some provocative.
I actually don't.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. That is the only flag I have ever pledged any allegiance to, or ever will.
Oh wait, you said flag? Oh, I got opinions on that.
That may That may surprise you, Adam, but
no. Do you guys think that I'm thinking you're going to get all upset about it? I both know that you're more educated in intelligence than that. I'm not saying that at all.
Oh,
I just,
what? So only ignorant, uneducated people support the Southern cause?
I think
is
only
that what
ignorant,
you're saying?
I think only ignorant
I thought you were
people,
Southern.
I thought only ignorant people are actually having a passionate debate about this subject.
Yeah,
because
I would agree
you know,
with that.
Because they're being distracted. They're being bamboozled by this.
So are they being flim-flammed?
They're being flim-flammed. Actually, that's the only part of it that I'm actually really want to talk about is the mass, you know, tail wagging the dog type of situation.
Yeah, I had to go to a doctor's appointment yesterday, and after almost 2 weeks in the woods, my blood pressure was 100 over 60. And I really don't want to mess that up. we're having a lovely time. We don't need to go this way.
We're just having hallucinations about smoke. That's the only thing. Besides that, we're all good.
Still haven't proven that it's a hallucination yet.
That's I guess that's true. That's true. And for those of you guys missing the story, I woke up late today for the podcast, and
you said this was private.
I can't talk about it? When did I say it was private?
Yet.
I never said it was private.
Well, look, I don't mind admitting to y'all that I'm a little weird, but I'm not sure I'm ready to put that out on the
I was talking about me being late.
At what point did you think that was hidden, Dan? That you were weird?
Okay, fair
point.
So
this is just a kind of a serendipitous situation. I want to share. I'm in the sharing kind of mood. This is the first season.
Okay.
We're gonna set the bar really low for the first episode of the fifth season, and then it will only get better from there.
We'll only go down from there.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
in that case, can we go with lucid dream rather than hallucination?
No, I want to tell mine first, and you're free, Dan, to tell yours any way you want, and then we'll let the people out there be like, that's some serendipitous weird stuff. So I get up today, and it's
lucid dream, not hallucination.
You can claim it to be whatever you want it to be. I'm gonna let you go. I'm gonna tell my version of what happened to me, and then you're free to do whatever you want.
This is 10 inches, and it was a lucid dream.
So last night, it's like 2:33 o'clock, and our smoke alarm goes off, a smoke detector, and I jump up, and you know, it stops, like it starts beeping, but it's not like a chirp, like the battery's going dead. And we actually have in my house the wired smoke alarm, so all the smoke alarms are connected to a power source. They also have battery backup, and they're all linked. So if one goes off, they all go off to the house. So, you know, get up, you know, check everything. Everything's fine. Animals are okay. Kids are okay. Well, unless I said animals first. I know it's a Freudian slip. Get back in bed. Well, then my middle one wakes up, and she wants to come in bed with mom and dad because she had a bad dream. And then my youngest one, comes in because she had a bad dream or whatever. So they stay there for a little bit. We put them back to bed. And then the youngest one comes back in again, and she opens it. We left their bedroom door open, and their bedroom door is open, night light, so there's more ambient light out there. And I see her standing in the archway, or like a silhouette, and as she moves, I could swear that she's you know, displacing smoke, like walking through mist or smoke. And I jump up, and I turn the light on, and I don't know if I'm in this hypnotic state or whatever, half asleep, and it sees like the whole top floor is foggy, you know? And like I'm perceiving smoke. And I call my wife over, and I was like, hey, do you see this? And she's like, no, I don't see anything. I don't have my glasses on. And so I go check the house again. Everything's fine. There's no smell. Again, the animals are okay. Everybody's fine. Nobody's coughing. And I'm worried about CO2 and all this other stuff. Anyway, I go back to sleep. You know, lose a good couple hours of sleep, you know, worrying about this, putting the kids back and forth to bed. I wake up this morning, come downstairs in the podcast, explaining to my co-hosts why I was late, that I just woke up. And Dan, you tell me
that you're late again.
You know, Robbie, I think Dan is trying to take is trying to take your place with the smart aleck comments.
No, Robbie does grumpy. I do smart aleck.
I'm not grumpy. I'm listening to you guys, enjoying. I'm eating Doritos and drinking coffee.
I didn't say you were grumpy. I said you did grumpy.
I didn't believe that.
Grumpy. She had to go to work early this morning. I didn't even get a chance to speak to her. Oh, not what you meant, is it? No, I'm sorry.
All right, so Dan, please tell your story.
Okay, so what Adam is trying to get to is just before I left for
you say, that's weird. You want to hear even – and I was like, isn't that bizarre? And then Dan says, you want to hear really bizarre? Now go. You had to set it up right, Dan.
Dan, do it over and make it more dramatic this time.
Okay. All right.
We're trying to sell some entertainment here, all right? Jesus.
All right, we're going to edit that out, and in 3, 2, 1. My God, Adam, seriously? You're not going to believe what just happened. It was so weird.
God, thank goodness you weren't in drama club, Dan.
I'm sorry, did I miss my mark? You want me to do it again?
No, keep on going.
They're ready for you on the set, Mr. DeVille.
They're not ready for my close-up, though, are they?
No.
All right, so what does make it even weirder is that just before I left for the woods, I woke up frantic with distinctly smelling smoke and seeing smoke waft under the bedroom door. So I scream for Beth to wake up, and I throw open the door, and I see smoke in the hallway. And I turn around and look at Beth, and she's panicked running towards the door. And when I look back out, I don't see smoke anymore. And we go through the house, we search the house, we can't find anything at all, but I smelled it and clearly saw it. And then a few days later, while we were at the bear camp, I woke up and could clearly see smoke coming under the door, to the point that, you know, I put my hand on the door, checked to see if it was hot, checked the doorknob, opened the doorknob, I saw smoke hanging in the cabin. And I looked back in my room to yell at the guy that I was sharing a room with. Bunk beds. Calm down. It was bunk beds. And before I yell, I look back out into the common room, and there's no sign of smoke.
It's pretty interesting. I mean, there's probably a chance that we were both, what did you say, lucid dreaming?
Yeah,
I thought lucid dreaming was just when you can, like, you realize you're dreaming, you can kind of control your dreams.
My understanding is that you're physically awake, but you're continuing to dream, and
I used to
the
call
dream
that
overlays reality.
I used to just call that hallucinations. but I don't know.
I am fairly confident there's some distinct differences.
Probably, which is
we're not crazy.
Well, I mean, the crazy part about mine is that there was – well, yeah, it's me. I mean, the damn smoke detector went off. And I mean,
yeah, or did
that's
it?
That's just – I mean, it woke up my wife too. She heard it. It wasn't just me hearing it, you know. I'm sure that's what woke up – God, never mind. So I don't know. This is some strange stuff. Well, I don't even know why we're talking about this. It just seemed like a fun topic.
It was fun right up until we started making fun of you.
Yeah. No, I don't care. If I piece shit. I don't know. Whoop, you're dead. So.
Yeah, I think that might replace foof.
Oh, whoop, you're dead?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's going to be it's an instant classic. I just wish people would capitalize on it a little bit more. So.
I've got that meme. You want me to send it to you?
Do you have it?
Yeah.
You made one?
No, somebody that night made it, and I pulled it down before it all got erased.
Okay. We'll talk about that a little bit later.
All right. So, you know, this could be a 2-hour podcast.
We haven't done a podcast in like a month, so it should be a 2-hour podcast. I don't know. That's up to you two. But I guess we should talk about our sponsors. So, of course, the Quick Door Podcast is brought to you by Dogwood Custom Knives. Check out dogwoodcustomknives.com, dealers at Edgeworks and Arizona Custom Knife. Also, Live Fire Gear LLC. Guys, check out Live Fire Gear LLC. We have a new combo product that will be out here shortly. I don't even know if I'm allowed to – well, I guess I can tell you about it if I want to tell you about it, right, Robbie?
I think you've got the authority.
We have a new combo product, and I guess I'm going to tell you now. Why not? It'll be save it for the second hour. Well, basically, it'll be all the Live Fire products in one. Blade Show was very good for us, so you guys should be seeing some more Live Fire stuff, some more colors, some more products, and we're pretty excited about that. Right now, we have a 20% off sale. Check out our Facebook page for all of the details, but we have some red, white, and blue paracord limited edition, supplies in case you guys want some patriotic paracord, and we'll be doing some more colors here in the very near future, but it was actually a funny story about the red, white, and blue. It was kind of an accident that happened, and we were like, well, you know what? That's perfect. We'll use that for 4th of July. And, guys, do us a favor. Check out the website at equiptoindoor.com. Start your Fair Play account today. One cool thing that we've changed, you can actually earn cash through your Fair Play account. If you guys are like, hey, I don't want to spend 5 cents on the website or whatever, that might be your opinion. But if you check out some of our sponsors, click on their websites and you look around, you'll actually earn cash for doing that. And then you can use that cash to put in for contests and giveaways, or you can use it for your E2E membership, or you can just save it up and cash it out and like earn money. Literally,
you know
earn
what I
money.
Like about that system?
What's that?
In today's world, you just have to accept that you're going to have to see ads to be able to see stuff.
Yes.
And at least this way you get to pick which ads you're seeing.
Well, that was kind of our goal. That was the idea, is that, unfortunately, you got to pay the piper with advertising, because advertising pays the bills. Are you going to be bombarded with a bunch of ads that, for Valtrex on YouTube? or are you gonna
shopping video? I don't need to know about feminine hygiene.
Yeah. Or the big ones are the political ones. I try to, we try to stay, politically neutral. Now I won't say that. I won't make a philosophical argument or whatever. You guys know how I roll with that. But anyway, so we wanted to partner up with good dealers, distributors, manufacturers, or companies that we've vetted. We like their products, and we want to educate you guys about their products, because it's probably stuff that you guys want to buy anyway. Most of the stuff that we talk about is gear. So that was kind of the way we were going to go. I actually do like your knives. It's not just your winning personality, Dan. So
flattery will get you everywhere.
I know. Now, Robbie, he can't stand your winning personality. He says your knives are okay most of the time. So,
from Robbie, that's actually pretty high praise.
It probably is.
I've never been told to F off and appreciated it so much before in my life.
So, Robbie, you've been kind of quiet. Why don't you tell the folks what's going on in your neck of the woods?
My neck of the woods has actually changed locations.
I know, man. I'm excited.
The wife arranged for a transfer to so that we could make a move, and we found us a nice, beautiful log cabin, and we relocated.
Congratulations!
What all the cool kids are doing.
Yes, and it was one of those things as we were looking for homes that when one was just meant for you.
It spoke to you.
Yeah, when we found a log cabin that already had a pre-built on-site 5-run dog kennel constructed, and it's logged to match the home in the backyard, we knew it was meant for us.
And you guys got a little bit of property that's close by that you can do a little bit of outdoor stuff on as well, right?
Sometimes, depending on the weather. We're in a part of the world where one day you're doing woods training and you wake up the next morning and you're doing river and flood training.
Yeah, swift water rescue.
And that's just trying to get out of your hammock.
I'll tell you, we had a death here on the lake right by my house. The water raised too high and the boat went over the dam. It's been crazy. The rain here's been crazy. Yeah. So, Anyway, but congratulations, dude. That's awesome.
Thank you.
And how are the puppies? How are the puppies liking the new property?
Oh, they love it. You know, the old one, she was unsure about this whole staircase thing, having to go up the staircase and down the staircase to go to bed and all that. But I think it's good for her, and got her on some good quality glucosamine tablets. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, it's making a big difference, and she's like 5 years younger again, it feels like.
How old is Kimba now?
13, 14, wow. Somewhere in there. 14,
that's,
maybe.
That's crazy. Ace will be 7 in December.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
Not
Big Ace is 6.
No spring chickens anymore.
I know.
I'm caught in a dilemma, guys, with the new kennel. I'm trying to decide whether I need to go back into business in the dog training stuff. Maybe come out with my own line of protection dogs.
I would love it.
Yeah, I would be a big fan of that.
I will tell you, man. Don't get me wrong. I love my boy, but I do love Ivy's size a lot. That yeah. Mal size. There's just something that's working for me with that. I mean, she's still a bullet out of a gun, for sure. Well,
I am trying to one of my dilemmas, I guess, is mm-hmm. trying to decide whether I want to go down the road of a specific breed, like a purebred breed,
mm-hmm.
or whether I want to delve into the band dog, you know, arena. With dogs that are not of a specific breed, but of their own breed, designed to be a purely working dog for defensive purpose.
That's pretty interesting. I mean, I if anybody could do it, I know you could.
And having a buddy that's a master trainer and owns a kennel, it's like having a buddy with a boat. It's all of the fun and none of the work.
Yeah. Right.
So I'm really strongly support Robbie's decision.
It should keep you entertained too, Robbie.
Yeah. Well, the controversy,
and you can hang out with people that you've got things in common with, like dogs.
The controversy is, if I go the way of the purebred, mm-hmm. marketing becomes easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. If I go the route of the band dog, I may have a higher quantity of workable dogs,
mm-hmm.
but it's difficult explaining to people that, you know, just because you have AKC paperwork with your dog doesn't mean they're qualified to do jack.
You know, yeah.
You could have a very well-bred paperweight.
You're right. And a lot of people, that's their lack of education on dogs leads them to believe that paperwork is what makes a dog. So, you know, if I go the band dog route, I may end up having to fight harder on the marketing to get people to realize that, okay, what you say you want is what I'm offering, even if it doesn't look like what you want, you know, what you think you want.
If you did go purebred, what breed do you think you would go?
Probably either Malinois or Dutchie.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could go Dutch Malinois.
Yeah. And that is because mostly of size, like you mentioned, Adam.
Mm-hmm.
In our modern world, the cars have gotten smaller and families, you know, all got to cram in a vehicle together. And, you know, the yards are getting smaller. Life is getting smaller. And, The Malinois just fits into a smaller package.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fecal factor of Ace, but he is a pain to take places sometimes.
Right.
Yeah,
and nobody stops the situation and weighs out an attack dog before they decide whether they're afraid of it.
This is also true. So, yeah. I think that's a pretty smart way to go, to tell you the truth. My
I would
opinion.
Have to say, also, just from a personal standpoint, I am kind of invested emotionally in mm-hmm. the darker bloodlines of the Malinois, some of the blacks mm-hmm. and the grays and all. I do just love those. So I don't know.
Well, as far as size goes, Robbie made a great observation when I was thinking about matcha, what to get next. And he said, drive 4 16-penny nails into your forearm and then hang 40 pounds off that and tell me what you're going to want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, when you got something with the bite strength of a well-trained Malinois or Dutchie clamped down on your arm, the difference between 45 pounds and 90 pounds becomes pretty negligent.
Yeah.
Negligible. Negligible. Agreed. It doesn't matter.
Fancy word. Yeah. Insert fancy word here.
There we go.
So if anybody has any comments, any of our listeners, feel free to email me. I'm open to listening to people's opinions, even if they don't have any education on the subject, because I'm very well
Neither
educated.
Neither do the people you sell to.
Yeah, I'm very well educated on the subject, and I have no blasted clue, so what I ought to do.
The advantage to a purebred is people know what a Malinois is.
This is
very
true.
Few people know what a band dog is.
This is true.
I don't know. I think it's unfortunate that we have the. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm a kind of a purebred snob. I wouldn't buy. Let me. I don't even know how to put this into words that makes sense. I do have the. You know, the inkling that if I'm going to buy a dog from a stranger, and I could see that. You know, if there's somebody out there who can help me out like Robbie, you know, there's always a gamble when you pick up a dog, even if it's purebred. You just have more chance sometimes to get a better dog if you know the trainer and the breeder and broker and everything. And I got pretty lucky with the dog that I got. But at the same time, you could still get just a waste. It doesn't guarantee anything. But it's also, I don't know. I see your dilemma, Robbie. I'll stop just, mumbling to myself.
My biggest concern
you will stop just short of giving an actual opinion that may help me. Thanks.
Well, I mean, it's just like, all right, well, my opinion is that I think on a business side, strictly business, you should go with the purebred. Because it's going to resonate with more people, and you're going to have an easier time. You're not going to be explaining, well, it doesn't matter. People are going to come in with an assumption that the dog is going to perform a certain way just because it's a purebred. And that could be a positive thing. You know, you don't have to fight that other hurdle. It's not like there's anything wrong with the Dutchies or the Mals in general, They don't have as many problems as some of the larger – like they don't have as many problems as Shepherds. They don't have as many problems as the Dobermans and stuff like that. So you're probably going to be getting a better stock because they're breeds that aren't super popular. They haven't been popular for very long, and so they haven't been watered down and destroyed like some other breeds. You know, there's probably a little bit more diversity if I'm right about that.
There are aspects, though, in what you just said that – For example, differences.
Yeah.
For example, I think you're familiar with the amount of hair that those
yes.
breeds produce inside your home and you must clean up, which is one of those avoidable things with a shorter haired dog.
Yeah, like Ivy doesn't shed at all compared to what Ace sheds like. Ace is a woolly mammoth.
Yeah, and many of your band dogs are from have a bulldog lineage and mastiff lineage and have short hair.
Yeah.
So, Robbie, I've been waiting a few years to be able to ask this question. And it's mostly because, well, I finally get to quote you back to you. So are you telling me you're trying to decide whether or not you want to make the best possible product? Is that what you're trying to decide?
Yes and no, Dan. Yes and no. Because unlike what you do, where the performance of the end result is dependent on the quality of the materials you start with. In my situation, I can hand you a end result that is almost identical based on the style of training I put on the foundation stock. So while I would train one differently than I would train the other, it is both, in both cases, we're chasing the same end result. So it would be like, what if you started with O1 steel on one side and CPM 154 on the other, but because of you had some magical heat treating method that the end which the end result would be they both performed exactly the same.
That wasn't nearly as much fun as I would hoped it would be.
I know it's a pain in the ass.
The other thing on the business end,
being Robbie is hard,
and this is purely just the business end. You're going to have more prejudice against the bully breeds, a bully lineage.
Yeah,
and you're gonna have a harder time selling it to selling a dog to a national market if you ever want to. Because I mean, I'll tell you right now, there's probably a couple thousand. That? No.
In New Jersey, that had a bully breed handicap assistance dog. Mm-hmm. We'll come back to it after this conversation.
Okay. Well, anyway, I mean, because you know, there's probably a couple thousand people out there that want a dog from Robert Oliver. You know, that have seen Ace, that have seen Ivy, that have seen Matcha, that have seen Kimba, and they're like, "Well, I want a dog trained like that." If you're going to be training, you know, you're talking about training full adult or young dogs, not just puppies. I mean, they're going to want whatever you train them to be. But the people who don't know you and who might not be able to rent their house out if they have a bulldog, you know, or people perceived to be something of a pit bull lineage. So that's kind of the other thing. And don't get me wrong, you know that I love pit bulls. They're amazing dogs.
I never said pit bull.
Well, I'm sorry.
Bully.
So anything that anybody less educated would confuse with being a pit bull or something like that.
Well, personally, no. I think if anybody confuses an American bulldog with a pit bull, they're ignorant.
They shouldn't be
making any decisions on dogs anyway.
Yeah, but that's not the reality. The reality is people mistake them all the time.
Hey,
you know, somebody might see Kane. Yes, sir.
I live in a world where there is a chance for change, and one man can make a difference in what reality is. Okay.
Don't be so negative. Somebody's been watching Age of Ultron again.
Go ahead, man. I'm sorry.
No, I'm just saying, like on the business end, just a strictly businessman.
Yeah.
You know, I would say that the Mao and your Dutchies will probably be the most profitable. They'll probably be the easiest to market, and it's not like, and then for training purposes, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know that bully breeds sometimes need a little bit more special training. Not to say they maybe. And this is something you told. Different training, yeah, and they probably need a more experienced trainer, correct? For me, I was very novice in training Ace. I was able to make mistakes, and Ace was able to rebound from that because of the kind of psychology or whatever. Where that might not be the case if I got a bully breed.
Well, a Malinois. I mean, you can ruin a Malinois is easier than a bully breed, I would think.
I would actually say that you need to be more critical with the bully breeds when making a decision on which dogs to train and which dogs should not be. And we're talking specifically protection work here.
Yeah.
You know, any dog can be trained obedience wise and all that. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about working dog. I think from a working dog perspective, the trainer needs to be more critical in his decisions of what dog passes qualification to receive that type of training. But once the dog has been selected to be adequate and appropriate, I don't find that the bully breeds are any more difficult for that type of work.
But do you have to be more critical?
I think in the selection process. But see, again, that's not something the client's going to have to deal with.
Yeah.
You know, that's on me. And I 100% agree with everything you said, Adam. And that's what's making this process or this decision hard for me, is because I'm now faced with a choice of, do I make a decision to go back to doing something from the perspective of finances, or, you know, do I make a statement with what I'm doing, proving a point, you know, of right and wrong?
Do you make thin blade really efficient knives, or do you just go with the current and make thick less effective knives?
I think that's a poor analogy, Dan. No offense, because I don't think a Dutch or Mao is less effective than a Bandog. I just think that it's going to be less work.
I'm not sure about that, Adam.
Okay.
And here's the reason.
I'm talking about less work on the marketing.
Okay, less work on the marketing, yes. But from the perspective of a satisfied client, let's face it, a dog like Ivy, for instance, could require a lot more exercise than the average family can handle giving.
That is true.
Ivy is a divorce waiting to happen for most families.
Right. Whereas something that's genetics are borrowed from the bully and the mastiff lines may be more inclined to be a couch potato more often than that Malinois.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for a true defensive dog, you don't need it to be a hyper athlete that can run something down for a half mile.
Right. So for family guardian home defense type dog, the end result would be they're happier in the purchase the day they buy it with the Malinois, but in truth, they may actually be happier a year later with the Bandog.
Yeah, if they buy it.
So, right, if they buy it. And so you see the dilemma there.
Yeah. No, I mean, I understand the dilemma.
It took somebody with Robbie's experience to pick Matcha out to fit in our family. Someone less experienced picking those bloodlines, it would be Matcha and I living in an apartment right now.
Let me rephrase the question then. Is it easier to give people what they want and inform it's what they need, or to change people's mind to what they need so they want it?
Well, and here's the problem with that.
I mean, that's basically the dilemma, right?
If the individual shows up with the money to purchase the Malinois, and I know that this dog is hardcore going to do the job perfectly, but I also know that the family I'm looking at is ill-prepared to live with this psychotic animal. My own moral beliefs wouldn't allow me to sell that dog to him anyway.
Yeah.
It's almost like that scene in Unbreakable when Samuel Jackson's in the comic book art gallery and that guy's like, oh, Jeffy's going to like this. He's like, excuse me? He's like, I believe one of us is wasted the other time. This is a piece of art. This isn't a toy for some kid named Jeffy. You know what I mean?
Exactly right. And see, in my perspective, to send that dog to that home would be punishing the dog. It would be cruelty to put the dog into a position where the family is not going to exercise him. Therefore, he's going to build up frustration, destroy their house. Then they're going to hate on the dog.
I don't think it's cruelty. I actually disagree with you, man. I think that you're taking away that person's choice to be responsible. You're enabling that person. I mean, if somebody wants to buy a dog, unless you think they're going to be abusive, you know, and beat the dog. But they're grown ass people, man. If they want to buy a dog, they should have the right to buy a dog. It's not your responsibility to police them.
But if I'm selling guns and you show up and start pointing the gun at my head while you're looking at it, selling you the damn gun.
Guns are regulated, and also you're talking about a crime now. Now they're committing a crime in your presence. You know? Yes.
They may have the right to buy it, but that doesn't mean I'm obligated to sell it.
You're not obligated to sell it.
If they prove that they're going to be an irresponsible gun owner,
let me flip the script on you. When I bought Ace, I was not prepared for what. For, I was not prepared for what I thought that I needed to do to what I know I need to do now. But I went and got myself educated and became more and more prepared by paying for classes, by going for classes, by talking to experts, and figuring out what to do.
You rose to the occasion.
Which is rare.
And I have proof that you are a rarity. At any city in this country, I can take you to a overfilled dog pound.
Let's talk about Melissa.
The average individual does not rise to the occasion.
So Melissa, the soap lady with Indigo?
Yeah.
She does a lot of...
You should go check out her soaps. They're awesome.
Oh, yeah. One of you has got a thank you for working the booth care package coming.
Well, I will tell you, though, she did send me a sample since. It's pine, coffee, and hops number 9. And I was thinking, like, what is the most manly soap we can make? Pine, coffee, and hops number 9. Manly, like outdoors manly. But continue your story there, Dan.
She does a lot of – she works with dog rescues, fostering.
Yep.
And she works with a lot of the high-risk dogs. And she has a freaking amazing Dutch Shepherd that they got. That it was about to be euthanized, and somebody realized that this dog needed work, but it went to somebody who had no idea what they were getting, and they nearly ruined the dog. And Melissa, with all of her experience, has freely admitted that they are struggling to find a house that can keep that dog. Because she can barely work it enough to keep it sane.
Yeah.
And her biggest concern is if they don't pick the next family very carefully, that dog's going to be euthanized.
Yeah.
It's going to go nuts. The family's going to not want it. It's going to become unadoptable because its drive is just through the roof. And it's going to be put down. All because somebody sold a working dog to somebody that had no business having it.
Yeah, but you can't tell me that Robbie, that you're not going to find the same situation if you sell somebody a band dog.
No, but Robbie's saying it's his obligation to not...
No, Adam, what I'm saying is that there is nobody out there just making a movie recently about the band dog that came home from combat when his handler got killed and got put in the home with the soldier's son, little brother, and...
You don't think that you're skilled enough to identify these people before they purchase the dog?
Yes, but I think there's going to be a higher propensity,
uh-huh,
of that type of mentality, searching for that dog with papers and that pure bloodline, than there would be the individuals out there who do not care what the bloodline is. They're looking for an animal to do a specific job, are very honest about what their capabilities are as handlers and owners. And, I think it would be easier to find the right clientele, just less successful.
With band dogs, the people that come to your door are going to be far more serious.
Yeah, I think. But this is why I'm asking. Because for every one of these arguments I make, there's two counter arguments that would prove I'm wrong.
I think that
one of the fundamental things, and I'm gonna put this out there, and I think that there's nothing wrong with that, is that the primary goal of any business is to make money.
Yeah,
you know, that's the whole reason. And it's not to make friends. It's not to
it could also be to personally enrich my life.
That's true. That's true. But you can't enrich your life if the company that you're running or the business that you're running is running at a deficit. That's going to do the opposite of enriching your life. And I'm not talking about spiritually. It's going to be a mental drag. It's going to be an emotional drag, and you're going to have to deal with how many you can't stand the conversations of dealing with people who are just dumb animal owners.
Right.
And I think regardless here's the one good thing I think you have for you is that you are well known in a community of people that you wouldn't mind speaking with who probably want to buy a dog from you. I think that if tomorrow Oliver Canine, you know, or Oliver, you know, breed, whatever, you know, you would name the company, and we came down there and shot a video and there's a litter of 8-9 puppies, they'd probably sell overnight. And
yeah.
You'd probably have a pool of individuals that you could interview and ascertain, you know, if this is going to be a good fit for them.
If I was raising and selling trained dogs, well, Adam, you know how much work, and Dan also, how much work goes into a trained dog.
Absolutely.
And the price goes up. The mm-hmm. additional price would also inhibit people.
Idiots. Yeah, that's the one thing that
everybody would want one until they found out they were $30,000 dogs.
Yeah.
Well, I mean that's – but that's some of the reason that the animals are that expensive. And that's not – I don't think that's a bad thing. You know, and I've talked about that. You know, if you want to go buy Ace right now or somebody from the same line of Ace, you're talking about $6,000 just to get it in the door. And that's not saying that he's fully armed and operational. You know, that's a young dog.
Yeah, that's a heartbeat.
Yeah, is that overpriced? Maybe. I mean, I could tell you. I mean, if Robbie had formally charged me for not, I'm sorry, I shouldn't. That sounds like a law enforcement thing. If Robbie didn't just train me and Ace together, and he charged me a fee for the hours that he wasn't my friend, the hours. I mean, that's probably $20,000. You know, I mean, we've worked hours and hours and hours with Ace. And we just did it for fun. I mean, we'd be out there camping, and we had breakfast done, and hey, man, you want to do some work with Ace? Yeah, let's do it. You know, so it was different than, you know, going in for formal training. But I mean, there's tons of work to be done. And I see your dilemma, man. I do, and I just think that it's.
I just have I just have to make sure that what I do for money isn't going to put me in a situation to violate my own moral compass.
Well, yeah,
that's kind of the part that I kind of disagree with you. I mean, if Dan sells a knife, right, and some guy takes that knife and goes and stabs somebody, did Dan violate his morals?
No, but if the guy tells him on it when he talks to Dan that he really needs a good knife for stabbing people.
Yeah. Well, what if he's a soldier?
Or you know? If a guy says, I'm an EMT, and I want to be able to cut car doors open with this knife, mm-hmm. I probably am not going to sell him a 1/16 inch Huntsman, badly they want it, no matter how
I think that if any, I think if anybody asked to cut a door open with one of your knives, Dan, I think you'd probably think that person was crazy. So
my slapping hand would get all itchy.
So I mean, dude. I understand your dilemma. I think that you're putting yourself at a position of disadvantage with the band dog. Now, something you might be able to start a revolution, you know, and the band dogs get popular.
Wasn't so long ago that everybody was buying quarter-inch knife blades.
But if that happens, then you're kind of faced with the same dilemma that you worried about people just buying the dog because it's popular, and that you're back. I mean, selling dogs is difficult, man. I do not envy dog dealers. I mean, it is a challenging thing, you know. And I think that the only way you really do it to a position where it works is just make sure that the price is high enough that the price of admission, you know, it challenges people to make sure that they're more serious. Now, you're still going to probably have idiots that have more money than sense. That always exists out there, but I don't really know if there's anything that you can do about that.
Tell you what, Robbie, I got the answer. I just figured it out. Do one of each and then give them to me, and you can see which one you think would be the better dog for people.
Yeah, that will work out. Hey, Dan.
Yeah.
I just got a home that adequately sized for me. I don't need you and four dogs coming to live in my house because your wife has disowned you.
Although, you should have heard her bragging on Matcha. Matcha has gone from, do you really need that dog, to let me tell you about what my dog did.
Well, wasn't that kind of the idea when we picked her out?
Again, we were not going to say that on the podcast where she might hear it.
Oh, yeah.
She does listen.
Yes. If only to make fun of me.
She actually listens to this podcast.
Oh, and critiques me.
I didn't realize anybody actually listened to it.
It happens from time to time.
Oh, believe me. That... I have media training every Tuesday after she listens to the podcast. I mean, obviously none of it works, but she tries.
I actually did get a compliment from somebody at Blade Show about the podcast. I met a lot of guys at the podcast. We actually should talk about Blade Show here in a second. I met a lot of people at Blade Show this year, like, you know, as we always do, but a lot of comments was like, "Hey man, really love the podcast. Where is it?" And I'm like, "Hey man, we've been taking a crazy amount of breaks. I mean, a crazy amount of stuff's happened. So we had to take breaks, and there, you know, there's been internet issues. Robbie just got his internet back.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to talk about that struggle, Robbie.
We have trouble waking up on time to do our podcast.
Yeah, because of smoke and, you know, aliens and all other stuff. So,
yeah, it took 3.5 weeks just to get fiber optic cable, you know, at my house, from the one provider willing to get me high speed internet out here.
Yeah. Another thing is, if anybody's out there who is a podcast, you know, specialist, and you want to assist me, I do want to find a way to put our podcast on Stitcher and how to put it someplace where the bandwidth, because we're using Blog Talk Radio right now, and there's 100 megs, and we'd like to do some longer shows, so we would not like to be limited by that, but it's always a struggle. And I've seen some of these other podcasts like Podbean or Podomatic, and it could be, you know, a couple hundred dollars, and you use up your space pretty quickly, and we have a lot of downloads, so I don't know if we could afford $5,000 a year for you know, podcast space out there on the interwebs. So anybody who knows about that.
On that note, Alex saved up all of his Blade Show money.
Uh-huh.
And bought himself a new computer.
Cool.
Which, first of all, it gave me a little pause when I found out that little sucker made that much money on nine. And I had to do a full accounting, and he didn't shave anything. He really did make that many knives.
Wow, nice.
But he is donating his, and I'm going to send it down to our technical expert, and have it scrubbed and set up strictly for podcast recording.
His old laptop.
Yeah. Yeah, I tried to take the new one, but Beth said that was just inappropriate.
All right. Well, moving on. Robbie, I understand your dilemma. My vote is the Mal or the Dutchie.
Okay.
My vote is the Band Dog.
Okay, that was helpful. That was a great one for each.
Mostly just to be contrary with Adam.
So, yeah, I think Dan is wrong. But maybe you could do all of them. You know?
Now we're pushing beyond what I'm going to find. Once it becomes so much of a job that I no longer care about the job, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You know you want that some black Dutchies.
I do want the – yeah, I do love them.
So.
But you also – let's talk about some of your bullies that you've trained.
This is true. Some of the best family dogs I've ever owned have been of the bully bloodlines.
And, gee, if only you knew where you could find something like an Alapaha to start working a bloodline with.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right, so let's talk about Blade Show. We've got a bunch of videos from Blade Show that we pushed out already, folks. I might even go over the list. It's a lot. First off, you know, Robbie, I did miss you not being there at Blade Show.
Thank you. It's nice to be missed.
It wasn't the same. It wasn't the same.
I missed his camaraderie and spending time with him, but I really did not appreciate his skills as a talent wrangler.
Yeah.
You were missed deeply, Robbie.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, you know what I missed? I missed the hound dog ability you have to find interesting stuff at the show. Because I really don't feel like I saw anything like – and this is no offense to anybody – But it's like there's nothing there that I really hadn't seen. I don't want to sound like an arrogant jackwagon or something, but usually we always find something new and innovative. I was like, oh, wow, that's awesome. And, I mean, it was still a good show. It was actually a really fun show, don't get me wrong. But there's nothing really that jumped out at me, with the exception of my corn cob handled Dogwood Custom Knife that I'm very happy with.
Yeah, I was about to say, one of your sponsors that premiered two or three new patterns and some new glow-in-the-dark stuff wants to talk to you.
Oh, you know, you're right. You're right. There was some stuff that was very interesting. All the stuff from Reliance Leatherwork.
Oh, you are a douche.
Yeah, but you said it.
You are a douche nozzle.
You set it up for him.
I know. I know. And yeah, it was a fun show, man. We had a good time. I'll tell you, I did something a little bit different here at the show. We you know, there's been years that we've gone and shot 30, 40, 50 videos at Blade, and I didn't do that. I actually went around and I enjoyed myself. I talked to everybody. You know, we shot about, I think, 14 or 15 total. So we kept it pretty lean. What?
I said we did miss the cameraman.
We did. Yeah. Pam did a good job, though, man.
She did a great job, but I kept missing my blocking. So, you know.
Yes, she wasn't.
A professional
we,
there.
We did speak about that she wasn't able to throw elbows like you, Robbie, to stop people from walking in our shot.
Yeah.
But we had some very entertaining ones.
What about the guy while you're doing the Reliance Leatherwork video?
Man. Honey, come here. Check this out. That's cool. Yeah. He was
there's just no way to edit that out, was there?
No. Well, you know what? That was such a rare, like the way that all happened, and he was so loud. That's what people don't realize is, like, those microphones are pretty sensitive, and a lot of time you can't hear anything. If somebody turns their head and starts talking, you can't hear anything. That guy was projecting so much that he just came through crystal clear, and it was just so funny that we just had to leave it in there. I mean, he was a nice gentleman. He actually came up and apologized to us afterwards, like, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize you guys were filming. And I was like, no, that's okay. You just walk right by the camera. And he's like,
no problem.
He chuckled
buy
at that.
Buy a knife
that,
and
you
a
know.
Custom sheath. We'll call it even.
Did he buy a knife?
I can't remember if he bought a knife. I know his wife was looking at one. I know he damn near bought one of everything that Reliance makes.
Oh yeah, yeah. He was a nice guy. He just it was a funny mistake. But I you know, wanted to keep it in there. It was entertaining. But yeah, it was fun. It was fun.
Speaking of keeping videos in.
Oh, okay. You want to jump into this?
I don't know. Are you comfortable talking about it? Are we allowed to talk about it?
I'm not uncomfortable to talk about it, and I'm allowed to do whatever I want. It's a free country.
Do we use this as a lead in to talk about the lawsuit?
We could do that too. Well, as many of you may or may not know, as I was walking around, there's one point where I think Pam was at the Dogwood booth, and I was just kind of walking around. I didn't have my camera with me or anything. And I was just taking some pictures and stuff, and I had my cell phone out. And I walked by the Cold Steel booth, and I saw an exchange with, the Cold Steel owner, Lynn Thompson. He was doing some of the demos for some of their medieval weapons. And it was just a very kind of surreal experience. And, you know, and so I recorded this little snippet, and I put it up on YouTube. And, you know, I didn't say anything. I just kind of gave a look when, you know, there was kind of an odd thing that happened. And I was having a go at Lynn. I mean, I'll freely admit that. And
but it was good natured. I mean, you weren't.
I wasn't trying to. I mean, here's the thing. And those of you guys who are listening to this podcast know, I mean, we, you know, nobody makes fun of us like us.
Before
you know what I mean?
This goes any further, I need to ask a question.
Shoot.
How freely am I allowed to speak my mind on this subject?
You are in a free society, my friend.
I recognize that, but at this moment, I am a representative, a host of the E2E podcast, and blah blah blah.
The views of Robert Oliver may or may not be the views of Equipped to Endure LLC.
As a sponsor, I'm comfortable with. We can always edit him out later.
Well, in that case. Why don't you guys call a damn spade a spade? The man's making a damn fool of himself, and you record it and make fun of the fact that he's making a fool of himself. You didn't tell him to make an idiot out of himself. He did that.
Well,
he
I will
got
say
up there and was being stupid.
I will say that it was a little. Here's my opinion of the whole thing. All right, I'm going to be fair. I'm going to be well rounded the whole thing. If you go to Blade Show, if you go to SHOT Show, there is a certain amount of ridiculousness associated with the excess of it. You know what I mean? Don't get me wrong. I got my bug out bag. I got my go kit and whatever. But I mean, there are times, and I am willing to admit that we go, you know, way overboard on stuff. Way overboard.
As somebody working the show, you really have to push things to get people's attention.
You do. You do. And I mean, we have said this before. I mean, we kind of joke at SHOT Show. Like, how many new variants of AR-15 or M16 platform can you sell? You know what I mean? And there's always this next new doodad or whatever. It's just the market, the sale. You know, I understand.
Have a woman in a bikini hold it.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, what does a girl in a skimpy, you know, low cut shirt have to do with flashlights? You know what I mean?
I don't know, but I want one.
So there's a part there, and I want to say again too is that, you know, we do a blooper reel every year. You know, we're always going at one another. You know, a joke. While I mean, we hassle each other on this podcast. So the setup and the context of it. Now, you know, I understand that Cold Steel has some kind of, you know, they say they have some kind of historic appreciation for these medieval weapons, and that's fine. I mean, I will fully admit, when I was, you know, 12 years old, I bought a ninja sword. You know what I mean? And I thought it was the coolest thing ever. And I had no idea about knives or whatever like I do now. And looking back at it, it's kind of embarrassing. It's kind of goofy. But you know what? That's what you do when you're 12 years old. You know?
I may have gotten the one with the spiked guard so I could punch somebody, and the spike on the back so I could hit them on the backswing, and
the
blade on the top so I could hit them on the upswing.
Again, I've actually, the views of Robert Oliver do not reflect the views of the E2E podcast. That's what you do when you're 12 years old, or you're apparently a full grown adult who owns.
Let me finish.
You have a
let me finish.
You
no,
have
I didn't.
Weapon,
I did.
Baby.
I do have a lightsaber though. I do have a lightsaber that glows and lights up. It's pretty awesome. And anyway, I've actually bought a Cold Steel. It's some kind of cutlass I bought for one of my officers who is a Civil War reenactor up in Gettysburg. And he loves it, you know. Anyway, so now looking at the Cold Steel setup, you know, these guys are, you know, battle garb. The one guy that's got a full mask has got a skull on it, you know. And
was that
if you watch any
or a fencing helmet,
it looked like a fencing helmet that had like a skull sock pulled over. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're obviously kind of having to go themselves, and you know, they're jumping around and being kind of crazy and whatnot. So I just thought it was funny. You know what I mean? So, and I poked fun at it. I thought it was, you know, something that's kind of goofy. It was in the spirit of having a good time. I mean, the first video that I edited was a blooper video for the show.
Until they said something, I thought they were joking around.
Well, and when I originally shot the video, actually you and Beth had come. We were getting ready to go to dinner, and it was like a short, like a 1 minute thing. And so when you guys come in, and I'm just, you know, we already had a couple beers, getting ready, we're primed, getting ready to hang out with the Eastlands.
Yeah.
So you want to chalk
up before you get on the trapeze.
That's right. And so we put the video out there, and I actually thought that everybody would kind of enjoy it. Like, I really thought that I was like, all right, this will be fun. So we put it out there, and you know, needless to say, the Cold Steel people didn't appreciate it. And so the comments started coming on the video, and actually people were being pretty. They're being pretty nasty, and like, here's the thing, man. Like, if you don't like that and you don't appreciate it, that's fine. But there was some ugliness that was going on, and it's like, hey, man, you don't, you know,
to whom?
to Les, to people going back and – not Les, to Lynn, to people going back and forth to each other. Like the video itself just started – instantly started like just a bunch of nasty drama. You know what I mean? Everything from, you know – I don't even want to get into it. But anyway, I was kind of like, hey, you know what? If that guy – basically that some people are like, oh, he shouldn't be selling these things to, you know, what an idiot or whatever. I'm like, hey, man, you know, that guy wants to get out there and do that. He's got a right to do that, you know.
And he's one of the most successful idiots in the knife community.
Cold Steel, they are a big company. They're a big company. So anyway, so then I start getting some flack from some of his guys, you know, some of his people. And Lynn has actually trained a lot. You know, after Cold Steel success, he was like, hey, you know, got a lot of, you know, some premier martial artists and stuff like that, some historical people. And he actually legitimately trains. I'm not going to take that away from him. And so I kind of get in an argument with one of his guys. And he, you know, calling me a jerk or calling me an asshat or something like that. And
I counter of the Cold Steel Corporation.
I don't know if it was a representative. I think this is a friend of Lynn, right? I don't know if he's a representative or whatever. I don't know his affiliation.
Is this the guy that wanted y'all to spar?
It did. Yeah, he did. He did.
So was he then the next day working at Lynn's booth?
I didn't see him at Lynn's booth, but okay, let me finish the story. Okay. So he, you know, he makes some statements, and I kind of counter them. You know, I'm like, you know, why, you know, I thought this was funny, and yeah, we're having to go. That's the spirit of we do. You guys haven't been at the most recent shows, and if you knew me, you know, this is how we go. I mean, yeah, we're having fun, but you know, me and Dan Coppins over there at Blind Horse last year, I was wearing a full plate of armor, and he was wearing a mask. This year, he was hitting an axe on a shield that I was holding. You know, I mean, that's we just go and we have a good time.
You make fat jokes about me. I mean, they hurt. I cry myself to sleep while I eat a tub of Haagen-Dazs, but I'm okay.
And I went back and kind of like, you know, argued all of the points. And I was like, dude, are you really saying that a pole axe is going to be the new self-defense weapon? You know, I mean, you guys are obviously this, you know, if people want to buy these historical weapons, that's fine, and mount them someplace. It's not like they're going to be practically used. Nobody's going to go out there and use a pole axe or a you know, Highlander sword or whatever in real life. And I mean, so what's the point here, right? And so we went back and forth, and I was actually, you know, I was actually shocked at some of the statements. Like, well, you need to come in and spar Lynn. I'm like, well, what is that going to prove? You know what I mean? And I mean, like, what does that have to do? I mean, you want to, you know, this is a violent action that we have to go at. And so then I countered him. He came back to me. He's like, well, you know, yeah, but I just feel it was a low blow. It was dirty, and it was kind of irresponsible that you were just kind of blatantly making fun. You know, we were all having a good time, and it was just kind of dirty. And at that point, I was like, you know, my conscience. Here's my thing, guys. If I get that feel in my stomach, like, oh, you know what, I kind of did do wrong. You know, if I feel guilty about something, you know, it's like I feel guilty about it. And if I'm not going to sit there and try to justify or rationalize or whatever, if I feel bad that I'm just making fun, that's not the person who I want to be. I don't want to just make fun of people for no reason and try to humiliate people. That's not my bag. So I wrote him back, and I was like, you know what? You're right. I'm gonna take the video down, because it had been one thing if I just posted it up there and just left it in there and let everybody draw their own conclusion. But that's not what I did. I edited my face in there, making like a, you know, just making a look, and then I cut points at it and repeated it over. Whoop, you're dead. Whoop, you're dead. And whatever. And slowed it down and made it dramatic. So, it, you know, even though I didn't say anything, I was speaking a message. So I took it down. And anyway, so the next day I walked in to the Blade Show, and the guy's right there, you know, and I walk right up to him like, hey, man, you know, I'm Adam. And you know, he was kind of shocked to see me, and I had a conversation. He's like, well, you know, you could put it back up. You know, we had a conversation. Like, listen, man, I was, you know, My goal there was to have fun, have a good time. We're all here in the spirit of the event, and I want to have a good time and whatnot. It wasn't trying to humiliate anybody. He's like, well, you know, it just was one of those things where we're all having a good time. Everybody's high on the show, and we see this, and we don't really know you, and we just thought that you're trying to, you know, have a go at us to be mean. And I was like, you know, I can appreciate that. I can appreciate that you guys felt that way. That's not really my style. That's not really my style. And he was like, well, you know, yeah, put it back up. That's fine. You know, it's okay. You know, I guess we understand it. And I was like, no, it's all right. Cause it's just, at this point, it's like the well's been kind of poisoned. You know, I don't want to be part of that conversation just to.
So
just to
the individual admits that they didn't know, that they lacked information. And of course, their first instinct was to invite you to a violent situation. Okay. Makes sense. that's the adult behavior. They should definitely be manufacturing sharp implements that very closely resemble tools of war. No question about it. That's the mentality.
I asked them about that, and I guess it's, you know, they're you know, that's probably the male bravado, and everybody's been training, and that's the first thing you want to go to is kind of a. Well, yeah, we'll just take this outside. That'll solve the problem. And everybody knows it doesn't solve the problem. You know
what
I mean?
Then those individuals need to quit training, because the first thing I learned in that type of training is you train to avoid violence.
I agree. And actually, I actually made that statement. I actually called them out on that. And that's – and he actually, you know, his whole thing was, yeah, you're probably right. You know, just – you know, we were all – you know. And it's not – I don't know if it's a personal thing that I think that Lynn couldn't use a pole axe. I'm not trying to talk about his skill or his proficiency with weapons or his proficiency with whatever. I mean, if he's an awesome martial artist, well, good for him. That's not the thing. It is my whole thing is just the kind of the entertainment of, like, all right, we're using medieval weapons. You know, like, I'm not going to be carrying a pole axe on my back to you know, I'm not going to give up my sidearm that I've been, you know, carrying for 12 years or whatever for a pole axe. I think that's a better self-defense tool. So,
and self-defense against a broadsword is not nearly as relevant as self-defense against a 12 gauge.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it's kind of funny because, you know, I actually thought that the video would be, you know, if people like, here's my whole thing. If you don't like Cold Steel, it doesn't matter what video I put out or what interview I put out. You're not going to like Cold Steel. And at the reverse, if you like Cold Steel, it doesn't matter what video I put out. It's not going to make you dislike Cold Steel. You know what I mean? That, like, people's opinions on that are already kind of set. The only thing that it does is kind of people who don't know about Cold Steel, it, you know, it's like, well, what is this guy all about? I mean, if you watch any of their videos when they're cutting hogs in half and throwing spears through stuff, I mean, it's pretty funny. I mean, those guys are, they know that I don't think that they can say, oh yeah, we're not having a go. Cause I mean, they're, you know, that's some pretty, I mean, they have a castle, you know, facade in their training room. It looks like a dungeon. You know what I mean? I thought there was a certain amount of, you know, comedy associated with it. That's at least my perception. I don't know. I mean, maybe they think that it's really serious. So, but it was funny. You know, it was entertaining, but it is what it is. So.
So we go from this, and, you know, they ask you to take it down. You did. You know, there was some conversation about being responsible. And then we get back from Blade Show and we find out there's a lawsuit being filed.
Yeah. Well, let's go into that, because that is actually – that is newsworthy stuff. So yeah, what's the lawsuit? What's the specifics, Dan?
And this bothers – as a maker, this concerns me quite a bit. And then just as culture and morality in our culture, mm-hmm. the knife-making community, mm-hmm. Cold Steel is suing
CRKT.
CRKT. And what it boils down to is
– That's Columbia River Knife and Tool.
Yep. Yeah.
Columbia River, in their advertising, said that their new locking system makes their folding knife virtually as strong as a fixed blade knife.
Virtually as strong.
Yep. So to protect us, the users – Cold Steel has decided to sue them for false advertising and saying that false advertising is injuring Cold Steel's business. So it's
that's the point that I wanted. Like, how are they going to prove damages? That's the part that I was very interested
because in. I'm going to guess that they make a folding knife that isn't selling well. And the reason it's not selling well is obviously because someone used the word virtually in their advertising.
Right.
I mean, that's my guess. But
because Lynn Thompson made a video of himself wearing black T-shirt and black shorts throwing tomahawks, and they didn't immediately sell as the ultimate destructive defense weapon.
So I got several problems with this. First of all, we're not talking copyright infringement. We are not talking about, you know, that they – we're not talking about a libel suit where one company lied about the other. We're talking about the word virtual in an advertisement. Sounds too much like it really is. So there, so one company is going to – one really large successful company is going to sue a up-and-coming successful company over what amounts to bullshit.
Yeah.
And especially somebody somebody on Blade Forums did a search for the number of times that Cold Steel uses virtual in their advertisements. Mm-hmm. And it was like 3 pages of results.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, because didn't they say that the – what is the folding, that Bush folder was virtually a fixed blade? They tried to bend it and everything.
Well, I'm hoping that Columbia River countersues with wasn't it Cold Steel that used to say the sharpest, toughest knife in the world? Yeah, well, fine. Prove that it's the sharpest, toughest knife
in
the
world. Well, I mean, Columbia River will countersue. I mean, that's like – that's just the – that's what you do when somebody sues you. And I mean, you immediately countersue them.
Man, I can only hope that the judge looks at the lawsuit, turns around to Cold Steel and says, you owe them for – you owe Columbia River for wasting their time.
So, I'm on the Cold Steel website.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And
that press release.
They have a survival knife called the Survival Edge. It's a plastic handled survival knife, hollowed handle. And in their own advertisement, on their own website, it says that it's butterfly light. Now, if I get one of those and it's not butterfly light, if I weigh every butterfly I can find against maybe two or three of their knives, and it's not the same weight as a butterfly, does that mean they have misled the community and that I need protection from their lies?
Yeah, that's my favorite part, is I'm too stupid to understand what virtual means, so I need for them to sue somebody for me.
Wait a minute. That knife, according to them, is also strong as an ox.
Ooh.
So if I drive that knife into a stump, hook a rope on it, and then hook the other end to an ox, if that is able to generate enough force to break that knife, does that disprove that their knife is not as strong as an ox?
No. For it to be as strong as an ox, you need to hook a cart to that knife, and then that knife should be able to drag the cart.
And apparently, their full 1-inch wide and 5-inch long that terminates into a strong clip point knife blade that is versatile enough to meet the demands of any, and any, the word any, is capitalized, survival situation. So in theory here, anyone who is able to come up with any survival situation of any type, that this knife is not competent and versatile enough to meet the demands of, has grounds for a lawsuit against Cold Steel. Is that correct?
I now see the problem. Cold Steel is not aware of the meaning or existence of the word virtually. Because if they had said virtually butterfly light or virtually any situation, then it would have been true. And they would never intentionally lie to us, so they must just be ignorant to the meaning of the word virtually.
Or you guys are doing exactly what they want to do, is just have a conversation about them.
Now, it wouldn't surprise me if this is all just one big, giant bullshit marketing ploy.
Publicity stunt?
Yeah.
Dance, puppets, dance. Yeah.
You know, I would make a big thing about not buying any Cold Steel, but I don't think I've ever owned Cold Steel.
I've actually got a couple Cold Steel blades.
I heard like in the $20 price point, that really entry level, that they used to have some good bang for the buck stuff.
There was a time when I really think, back when they were still making the Carbon V steel, mm-hmm. that their SRK knife was probably the best purchase for a survival, for a general purpose survival knife on the market.
Yep, I agree.
Why do you think they changed?
I don't know.
The company just grew, and they you know, Camillus dropped off, and they went overseas to get some of their stuff, and now they're just kind of a larger company that their market has changed, and it's profitable for them, so they're just changing it, and you know, they're getting into a space.
When they're
getting into a space,
they start suing people.
Yeah,
right.
I don't know.
And if you own a survival edge that's not light as a butterfly and strong as an ox, you may want to talk to your attorney. I don't know.
I feel a class action suit coming on.
I'm not an attorney.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and neither am I, but you don't need to be to sue somebody.
Apparently.
I mean, hell, you don't even have to have a legitimate gripe.
That's true. You can pretty much sue anybody for anything, unfortunately, in this country. So I wonder why that frivolous lawsuit laws never came out. Like, to fine people for that. That's what we need.
Well, aren't most lawyers politicians before they – I mean, politicians, lawyers before they become politicians?
This is true. This is true.
Criminal training.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's boot camp for criminals.
Being a politician.
That makes sense. Now, being a lawyer is training for being a politician.
Yeah, unfortunately. So what do we all think about this, Robbie?
About what?
About the lawsuit. What do you think is going to happen?
I don't know. Probably nothing except Cold Steel's going to spend a bunch of money to make another company spend a bunch of money, and they just take it out of their advertising budget.
That's the part that bothers me, is that regardless, Columbia is going to have to spend money to defend themselves.
Maybe. I mean, I'm sure they have lawyers that are employees or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it's probably not as much as you or me going out and buying getting a lawyer for a civil case. You know what I mean? They probably have lawyers on payroll that are going to be, you know, I don't know, but I don't know. They're pretty big, man.
I mean, I know they're pretty big, but I didn't know if they were a room full of lawyers big.
I'm not saying a room full of lawyers. I mean,
well, and regardless, that's still.
Yeah, it's
even if they have a room full of lawyers, it's still crap that they have to.
I don't understand the logic, man. I don't understand the logic. So, you know, it is. I don't know why people do the things they do, though. So,
I think your problem in understanding it is not understanding the logic. I think it's because you don't recognize the lack of logic.
Perhaps. That's also a possibility.
You know, somebody that would file a lawsuit like this would probably dress up in secondhand sporting equipment at a blade show and sling axes at each other.
They did have a crowd, though. It's one of the most one of the more entertaining things.
Oh, I loved watching it, and it was entertaining. Now just, you know, don't whine about it later.
Yeah. I actually have a buddy of mine who does this. The best thing I can explain, it's like medieval MMA. And he goes to Europe for this. But these guys dress up in real armor with real swords. The only thing is they don't have an edge on them. And like before you go into battle, they actually take your sword and smash it against an anvil a bunch of times to make sure that it doesn't break. And those guys go out there and they beat themselves bloody like a mixed martial arts event.
I have seen some of that, and
yeah,
the skill that it would take to make those replicas, I am very impressed with.
Yeah, and like he's going to get me an axe I want a Viking axe to like put in my basement as like a wall hanger, because Vikings are awesome.
And you're going to get some wolf runes. Scribed
exactly.
Into it.
That's right. And he actually talking about getting like a Viking shield or something like that. That, you know, just
and you
kind of
guys wonder why you have mystic smoke climbing your staircase.
I'm not saying it's a good idea. I'm just calling Adam out indirectly on what he's really trying to do.
That's all right. Hey, man.
It's going to go behind the secret door, and there's going to be –
You know what? Pam said I can't do this. I can't do the secret door anymore. I can't do it, man. Just,
so
it's just too expensive. Yeah, I mean, I told everybody about it. Oh, yeah, I have a bookcase store right here. It's going to be awesome. Anyway.
Just do it before you tell your wife, man. Come on.
Well, oh, yeah. Hey, honey, I just spent a bunch of money finishing this room. Oh, where did it go? There's a door here where the entrance used to be. Yeah, Dan, that'll work.
Better to beg for forgiveness than ask for permission.
Yeah.
See, that sounds like a married man right there.
Yeah. Well, never mind. I'm going to leave that alone. But anyway, this guy, his name is Paul. He's a big guy too, man. He's like 6'7". And he used to do jiu-jitsu and everything. He was into MMA before he got into this stuff. And he's just like, dude, he's like, this is just it's awesome. It's a big historical thing. He goes over to Europe. He was actually in Poland, and there's U.S. teams, there's Russian teams, Polish teams, German, Italian, and they all have to have historically accurate weapons, gear, clothing, everything, and it's all got to match. You can't take like a axe from this period and a shield from this period where the technology changed. It's all got to be appropriate to that time. Anyway, but it's funny because the first time I saw him, I was like, oh man, you into LARPing? And like he's like, listen, bro.
Let you have that one because you don't.
Yeah, I'm gonna let you have that one. So, but you know, hey man, you know, I'll take an ass whooping. That's okay. It won't be the first time. And
the longsword bouts.
Yeah, but
in that
he came. Dude, he came back, man. He had a freaking hole in his side. He broke a rib and busted his nose up. And those guys are brutal, man. I mean, they have like full plate armor. But they just go there and start smashing each other until, you know, one side is victorious, the other side's laying on the ground. And it's almost like, I guess, like sumo rules in that aspect. Like, as soon as somebody hits the ground, you stop. You know what I mean? So you got to stay on your feet. But it's pretty interesting. I don't know why I got off on that tangent. I guess we were talking about cold steel weapons. But they do not use cold steel weapons. Those weapons aren't he tells me that they are not – he is familiar with them, not as a knife guy, but as a guy that does this real life fighting. They do not use those weapons. Those weapons do not meet the standards.
If one breaks and you wind up with a jagged point or a bunch of shrapnel flying.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
If the head slips off the half of an axe, it doesn't have to be sharp to do damage.
Yeah. So, but it's interesting. It's funny, people, you know, the hobbies that people are into. You know, we all have our interests. So, what else we got? Anybody have any gear they want to talk about?
We can talk about...
Oh, Dan, you have my pot, right? My little zebra pot-like?
I might have that, and a Taiwanese mess kit, and a wooden spoon.
Okay, I want that back. It's funny how you haven't called me and said, hey, I have this for you.
Well, see, I thought you took Robbie's, and the one I had, I was going to send down to Robbie.
I didn't know Robbie had one.
Yeah,
Robbie has one.
James Montana sent one care package to each of us by way of a Mad Scotsman.
Yeah.
Because pretty cool. Only in our community does a Scotsman bring us stuff from an American living in Taiwan.
That's right.
That makes perfect sense.
It does.
You know, I know it's a little thing, but those chopsticks are one of my favorite things in there.
Mine too.
Because when I first got it, I was looking, I'm like, why did he send me reading glasses? I mean, is he trying to tell me something? And then when I opened it up, I'm like, what is this? And then I put the first one together. I said, oh, it's a chopstick. I actually used them at the Japanese restaurant the other day.
You brought your own chopsticks to a Japanese restaurant?
I did.
Look at you, cool guy.
No.
Or douchebag.
I was going to say, yeah. We all know that if we're sitting in that restaurant and saw him do that, we would think douchebag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, one of you would throw things at me.
I would be embarrassed. I'm like, don't let the waitress see this.
Jeez, gosh.
That's okay. I brought my own chopsticks.
Oh, don't worry. I tried to say it in Japanese.
Oh, jeez.
I'm kidding.
That's all right. Yeah, but I gotta get that. Forgot about that. I was actually very disappointed that I left that there.
So did either one of you, since I wasn't there, did any one of you, either one of you get any new toys, like buy any new toys at Blade Show?
Man, I screwed up so bad. I let Beth hold the booth money for a minute while I went to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. I never got it back.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I picked up some cool handle material when she wasn't looking. Some stabilized stuff and some of the new shade tree stuff. But yeah, I mean, I usually can skim a couple hundred off the top without her knowing about it.
Not this year.
I know. And as soon as I did it, I knew I'd messed up, but you know,
it happens.
Yeah. The die was cast at that point.
I actually didn't buy anything. I mean, I got some stuff. I mean, I got some stuff from some people for reviews and tests and stuff, but I actually didn't buy anything either.
You didn't get your Andy Roy Duke?
You know, I had one in my hand, and he was going to put this. I got to actually give him a call. It was a beautiful piece. And I got in a meeting the last day, and we were running late. The meeting went – so like the Sunday we went in there, we had to leave early, get to the airport. Of course, ran into the Cold Steel guy, and then I had a meeting. And I thought that meeting was going to be like a half an hour. It ended up being 2.5 hours, which was good. But then we were like literally running out the door to get to the airport for our flight. So, yeah. You know, at a point where we were at the Dogwood and I had to be rude to Pam, like, listen, we need to go now. We are going to miss our flight. So I did not get a chance to run back to Andy and pick up that knife. And I got to give him a call because I still want it. But yeah, so I didn't get any toys this year.
You got a knife and a spiffy sheath.
I did.
Matt, I think Tim actually did the tooling.
I thought we were talking about purchases though, you know. That was a barter.
Okay, good point.
Yeah.
And believe me, that was worth every moment of that knife.
Dan. So, yeah, it was – but, you know, it was a fun show, man. It was good times. I'll tell you, man, you know who are awesome people? You know, Matt and Tim and that whole gang, just great people, man. Oh, man, I wish I lived in South Carolina so I could hang out with those guys a little bit more.
And Tim's girlfriend is a concealed carry instructor.
Is she?
Yes.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Talk about the. I mean,
yes, that's awesome. She's got those piercing blue gunslinger eyes, though, doesn't she?
You know, my wife listens to this podcast, man.
Well, no, there's kind of like a there. You never heard that term before,
like Doc Holliday.
There's a common thing that for whatever reason that there's like a lot of gunslingers back in the day had piercing blue eyes. I don't know if that's kind of urban legend, but I've always heard that before.
She's got the kind of eyes that in a photograph, I mean, they just pop.
Yeah, it almost like is that Photoshop? Her eyes are really that blue? You know that? Yeah. So, but lovely people. Had a good time, and it's one of those things where you know you meet some people and it's like you've known them your whole life. They're just great fun. Had a great time, and it was just a very enjoyable event, man.
So am I to understand that you have a Dogwood knife with a sheath that has tooling?
I do. It'll be coming out in a video here pretty soon.
What kind of tooling is it?
Very, very well done tooling.
I have a sheath with tooling. However, I have no proof of it.
I cannot confirm nor deny.
That's because there's no knife to put in it yet.
I've got a knife that will fit it.
All right, I'll send it down. Happy birthday, you grumpy old.
Well, I'm just saying, I'm already walking around and I have no.
No. That's a sheath for people who went to Blade Show.
I have no pants. I have no pants left that with pockets that don't have a hole in them from carrying that knife in my pocket with no sheath.
Speaking of, you never did decide. Do you want 1/8 or 3/32 on that?
Long dramatic pause.
I can't.
It's all right.
I might just decide for you.
I really think I need 3/32. I mean, I want to want the 1/8, but I've gotten so dasted accustomed to the performance I get from the 3/32. You know what I mean? It's kind of like after you've driven the Ferrari, How do you go back to the Pinto?
I don't think it's a Pinto, buddy. I mean, I think it's like, do you want the Ferrari or do you want the Porsche?
How do you go back to a Toyota Corolla? It's a perfectly adequate, great, comfortable, good fuel economy, long life, you know, of the engine, wonderful little car. But I was just driving a Ferrari.
So here's the real question. Are you ever going to let somebody else borrow that knife at the camp?
I don't let people borrow that knife in my house.
Then go 332nd. As soon as somebody says, hey, can I borrow that knife? As long as you're willing to say no, then go 332nd.
Yeah. I don't even let my wife use that knife in the kitchen. I go retrieve that knife when I get ready to cook and look at her and go, what? You've got your own dogwood with pink handles. It's right over there.
Speaking of, I got a great question about the Huntsman versus the Long Hunter as a kitchen knife.
As a kitchen knife, Long Hunter. A skinning hunting knife, Huntsman.
Yeah, and I tried to explain in my answer that the task that those knives were designed for overlap, but they're separate.
Yeah.
A hunting knife and a Long Hunter are two different.
Yeah.
They have two different purposes.
If you want to skin a deer and clean some fish, get the Huntsman. If you want to break down a caribou, get the Long Hunter.
Yeah.
Not difficult. Yeah.
Yeah. Or if you're going to the woods for 3 weeks, take a Long Hunter. If you're going on a 3-day hunting trip, take the Huntsman.
I think what we're getting at here is buy both.
Yeah. And then you'll probably want a 3-finger just for those little tasks.
EDC carry, yeah.
Yeah. Which, speaking of the guide on the bear hunt, I used my 3-finger when we were skinning.
Mm-hmm.
And I just shipped him one this morning.
So just while we're wasting time talking about dogwood knives, and we were specifically talking about knives for me.
Yeah.
And I know that you specifically are getting a particular steel for my Long Hunter. Is there any chance?
Are you grinding a knife right now?
Is me? There,
yeah.
I thought that was on y'all's end.
Oh, no, it wasn't.
It's probably me creaking in this chair.
Okay, continue, Robbie.
I live out in the country. I'm sitting in a wicker chair on my back deck doing this podcast.
Actually, that sounds like cicadas.
Cicadas. That's what it is.
Oh, yeah. Those are in the background.
They're just not picking up until you start talking.
The dogs quit barking so you can hear those. Is there any chance that there would be some 332nd steel in that type of steel left over enough from making that knife to make me maybe a matching 3-finger to go with it?
I gotta order a whole bar of it, so...
Would that not be awesomeness?
That would be, I mean, it's not S35VN, but that would be pretty awesome.
Let me tell you something. don't you get me started. I am not no fancy pants liberal lawyer living in some mansion somewhere who carries S35VN. I'm a real working man, and that's why I want that 3V.
Oh, so you don't want the SM100 I just got the email about.
Is it coming 332nd?
That's what I'm waiting to hear.
And also, no, I don't want the first one. I'll take the first one as a prototype to play with, yeah. But do I want you to put my fancy handle material and nice pen and put it in a fancy sheath for me to be able to display it when I'm not carrying it and all that? No. On a steel that is that new? Uh-uh. I want a beater out of that stuff to play with for at least a year before.
That reminds me, I did get something cool at Blade Show.
What's that?
What's that?
I got 6 handle sets of stabilized dogwood.
Cool. That's really cool.
Yep. And I got one of them is Jamaican dogwood, which I had not heard of.
And it's been spoken for.
Yeah. And it is almost as dense as Robbie.
See, this is how we show love here, guys,
yeah,
on the podcast. You should hear it when we're not actually going for the PG rating. What we say to one another.
It may be more dense than I am, but I definitely got it beat on the ugly factor.
If this is true. I mean, you can clean the wood up.
That's right. You can put a French polish on me.
You can put lipstick on a pig, but I ain't kissing it.
I know. Oh, no, that depends really on hate lipstick. That depends on how much alcohol you had that day, there, Dan. You probably get you to kiss anything if you wanted to.
It has nothing to do with the pig. You just don't like lipstick.
I'm not going to confirm or deny that.
Oh, man.
As a matter of fact, if Dan comes to visit, it's a good precaution to go ahead and put lipstick on all your pigs just to keep Dan out of the pen.
Yeah, I come over to Robbie's house and Kim has got lipstick all over.
Hey, while we're having this late, moment, I got a question to ask you guys. And this probably, I probably shouldn't be saying this.
You're going to bring us down again, Adam?
I'm going to bring you down again.
What is it with you, man?
I don't know, man. My thing is, why is everybody so sensitive nowadays? You know what I mean?
Like, that offends me.
Did you see the potato thing that Tim put up?
Yes.
Oh, man.
I wish that.
Does anybody have Facebook open where they can read that?
Let me see if I can find it.
I have Facebook open, but I have no clue what you guys are talking about.
Go to my personal page, and there's this picture of a potato, and there's a comment there.
You have a personal Facebook page?
I do. You're a friend with me, Dan.
No, I'm not.
Are you serious?
I had no idea you had a personal page. Yeah, matter of fact, when I asked, you told me you didn't have one.
I don't think that's true. You're just having to go now.
Yeah.
That's absolutely not true, Dan. Then there's no reason to lie. He did not tell you that. You asked if he had one. I asked him if I could tell you, and he said, no, don't tell that son of a bitch. So it was me that told you that.
Oh, okay.
Not
okay,
him.
My bad. See, all that's right, the kind of talent wrangling I'm talking about.
That's right.
Okay, I'm looking at work.
All right, I've got it up, but are we sure we want the dyslexic kid to try and read this on air?
No, I don't want him to read it. Robbie, you read it.
I'm offended by this potato.
Oh, first off, it's just a picture of a normal potato.
Yeah, just
doesn't have any shape of it.
It's a clean Idaho baking potato, well lit, not overshadowed. Yes. It's natural. It hasn't been photoshopped.
Please continue, Robbie.
Trigger warning. During a discussion earlier today, someone posted this meme. I suppose in an effort to make light of the perpetual outrage and offense that permeates our culture. But I think instead, this heartless and callous individual only demonstrated the need for the PC police. You think it's fun to joke about this potato, but do you consider how this image might trigger someone, like myself, with Irish ancestry, because it reminds us of the potato famine? Also, the potato is brown and dirty, and it grows in the ground, which could easily be construed as a statement that brown-skinned people are dirty and live in caves. Meanwhile, people from Idaho are likely offended because this image appropriates their culture and makes a mockery of it. It might be a big laugh to you, but remember that this potato is also a visual image, which is certain to make the visually impaired feel excluded. Not to mention that a potato is a spherical three-dimensional object. If you stop to think for 1 second, you might see how this could
it's supposed to be ostracized.
Ostracized those who struggle with depth perception and those who are geometrically challenged. This says nothing of the trauma it will surely impose on the starch intolerant community. Obviously, but I'm sure you all knew this, potatoes are originally indigenous to the Andes mountain region. So this picture could easily cause emotional stress to the peoples of that area who feel they don't get enough credit for cultivating the potato for so many centuries before privileged white Americans stole it. So yeah, have your laugh, you bigots. But think about what kind of harm a provocative photo like this might do to all these groups. As you can clearly see, everything truly is offensive, and everyone's feelings are hurt, So stop saying things, thinking things, or otherwise communicating thoughts of any kind to anyone. It's the only way to make sure everyone is safe. The end.
Pretty powerful, right?
It is.
Thank God it wasn't a new potato.
No kidding.
You know, it kind of reminds me of, you know, what was the Supreme Court case about pornography? You know, they said, I can't tell you what it is, but I know it when I see it. And I think that needs to be, kind of put on everybody's sensitive sensibilities, that, you know, hey, you know what? Not everything is racist. Not everything is just mean hearted. Sometimes, you know, people are just people and they have feelings about things. Like the word discriminate, right? It's such a bad word, right? It's no, like I discriminated today between if I'm going to have milk in my coffee or just black coffee. I made a decision, you know, I discriminated against the milk. Now when we start talking about racial discrimination and just, you know, being mean to people just because of the color of the skin or just their culture and not anything else. I mean, that's wrong. But I think it's becoming such a easy catchphrase to point at somebody and say that they're racist or sexist or whatever, and that, you know, it invalidates their ability to have an opinion or to feel a certain way about something. Adam, you know? Adam. Yes, sir.
I say suck it up, Nancy.
Did you see Jon Stewart's little thing on why the comedians are no longer wanting to do shows at college campuses?
I heard about it. I did not see it.
Well, first of all, he starts off with a picture of Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, and Larry the Cable Guy, and says all three have now, you know, come out saying they're not going to do comedy at college campuses anymore. Mm-hmm. And Jon Stewart, of course, makes the point: when a Jew, a black guy, and a redneck all agree on something. Now it's time to pay attention.
I actually, like, let me preface
isn't that
this by
the
saying
start of a joke.
I don't share his views, but I actually love watching Jon Stewart. I think he's funny.
He's funny. He's wrong a lot, but
he is wrong. I think the disservice that he does is that he can always fall back to, oh, it's just a comedy show, but. Right. The fact of the matter is that he has a generation of people that think that what he's saying is the political truth. And that
yes,
it's
they
not
don't
satire.
Recognize the satire.
But he's got this armor of satire, and it's like, come on, dude, you know better than that. You know that's not legit. That people are taking this at its value of how you're perceiving it, how you're projecting it, and it's not 100% satire. I think he's very disingenuous in that. I think he's a brilliant comedian. I think he's very funny. He's actually bought me a drink. There's a story that went along with that. But I don't agree with that.
Well, he goes on, Adam, to say that one of the last college campuses that Jerry Seinfeld played.
Yeah.
That one of the students wrote Jerry a letter telling Jerry why he was offensive and that he would try to help educate Jerry Seinfeld on comedy. Jon Stewart's like, okay, it's a shame that George Carlin is not still alive to reply to this guy.
Yeah.
You know, and talks about, yeah, that the guy, the letter would say something along the lines of, listen, I'm sorry to, you know, disturb you. I'm sure you're in the middle of writing a letter to Hawkins explaining why he doesn't understand physics. But think about that. College kids thinking they understand more about comedy than some of the most, you know, highly paid comedians on the planet, and that comedians can't perform at college campuses anymore because things have become so PC, people can't take a joke.
It's getting to be where there's this funny, I wish I say it, it's a funny YouTube video. It's like these, I guess they're hipsters, like sitting around like, hey, what should we do today? And they're like, oh, let's go to the store. Oh, big business. You know, that's wrong. Well, let's go to the oceans. Ah, pollution. We're ruining the, the like anything they talk about, they all go back and forth like, how dare you, you know, check your privilege, X, Y, Z. And finally, one's like, why don't we just kill ourselves right now? And they're like, oh, gun lobby. I mean, it's just so utterly ridiculous. But it's like true. It's like, what's that?
The one that gets me is this 20-nothing kid who's never lived outside the world.
Yeah, still on their parents' insurance.
Going to explain to, you know, a very wealthy, highly successful, extremely experienced comedian how to be funny.
Expert. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, gosh. It's scary, man. It is scary because it's like, it reminds me of that guy in a movie who makes contact with the whatever indigenous people. And he's like, no, yeah, we're going to, or like the alien or whatever. No, we're going to communicate with them. And he's the first one to die. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's you're so arrogant in your view of how the world should be, and you fail to realize how it is, you know?
Hey, you guys got time for a personal rant?
Sure.
But it's back to the outdoor stuff and all.
Well, that would be a subtle change for our podcast to talk about outdoor stuff.
Dude, I am so blasted tired of seeing pictures of guys on the internet holding up their knife and talking about their choice for a one-tool option while they're wearing a backpack that in the backpack has shelter, insulation, water, all this kind of crap. If you're carrying everything you need for life in your backpack, screw a one-tool option. You want to be able to get away with zero tools.
Hey, Robbie?
Yeah.
If you are practicing the one tool option, you are the one tool.
Interesting.
Is that a double meaning there?
Yeah. But am I wrong? I mean, that one tool means you take that tool and only that tool and go out and provide all those things that those guys are carrying in the backpack.
You go out in the woods naked with just a knife.
I mean, am I missing something, or isn't that the idea of a one-tool option?
You know, you don't actually need four tires on a car. So just every so often I take one of the wheels off my car before I go to work. I mean, that seems like a good plan, doesn't it?
I don't understand.
We've talked about it before. If you are trying to do legitimate training for an emergency, there's some argument there. But when your intentional plan is to go to the woods and handicap yourself as much as possible, I really question the logic in that.
You're talking about outside of a training scenario.
Yeah.
But even then, isn't there a hypocrisy there if you're claiming you're doing a one-tool option, but you're just not counting your sleeping bag, tarp, pot, and everything as tools?
Oh, that's complete garbage.
I think that they're taking it out of context, and generally, and you're taking their context out of context because they're not being as literal as they should be with that statement. You know what I mean? Maybe they're talking about the single edge tool option.
But
they missed the whole point
is,
of what the one tool option originally was.
Yeah, if you're just
done that too. I've made the statement of, you know, the one tool cutting option. I mean, that's a conversation that I've said in the past. Now I will say that I've since
you were a
been
tool.
Educated. Well, I mean, it's one of those things where at one point there was a conversation about this philosophy and everybody's kind of entertaining the idea, but then after a while you realize, well, that's just kind of a dumb idea. That's just, you know, and you kind of grow up from that idea that you thought was a conversation. And I think what it comes down to, and I'm going to probably point to who it comes from, is probably from Tom Brown, who kind of wanted to go out in the woods and with nothing but, you know, no shoes, no clothes. Like, I'm not sure about this because it's been a while since I read one of his books. And Robbie, you may know better than I. But I think at one story about grandfather, like, he literally went out in the woods and, you know, naked with just a knife and kind of had to make everything, had to, you know, do everything and kind of come back making shoes and clothing for himself and all the skills that he learned, like literally naked, except a knife. And that was kind of the one tool thing. And then he marketed the Tom Brown Tracker as the one tool option based on that kind of that story of you have to be so good that you can go into the woods. And actually, he might not even have had a knife. He might have gone into the woods just naked and procured everything. He even made, you know, flint knapping his own stone knife. I don't know. But anyway.
And on that, the one tool option, I've gotten a discussion recently with somebody talking about, I went to the woods with nothing but a knife. Or no, his argument was, you know, what if you get lost? What if there's a plane crash or an animal attack or you fall in the water? You know, all you're going to have is your knife. And I finally just said, do you have pockets in your pants? And he said, yeah. I said, can you put stuff in your pockets? He said, yeah. I said, if you lose your backpack, are your pockets still attached to your pants? He said, yeah. I said, well, then there's no reason for you to be without.
Yeah. Unless you're in some kind of escape evasion thing where you've gotten kidnapped and you've escaped with butt naked out in the woods.
No. Part of my escape plan is to kill one of my captors and take their bag.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. Well, then you got it all solved, Robbie.
I've got it solved.
Yeah. I don't know, man.
That's why I keep Stanley the honey badger near me at all times.
Yeah, Stanley is the man. I've gotten to the point where, to me now, Robbie, that conversation is like somebody trying to tell me that the earth is flat. Like they want to engage me in a conversation that the earth is flat. And I'm just like, I just smile at them and excuse myself and, you know, not waste my time.
I'm not even mad at the conversation. I'm mad at the hypocrisy of the individuals trying to represent these tools that they particularly – they carry this individual tool and they are propagating the idea that it is an acceptable choice for the one tool option when they themselves have proven in their own picture that they are not practicing a one tool option.
Is this somebody that we can talk about specifically or
no,
you don't want to put them out there?
Numerous individuals I've seen on different boards and groups and all on Facebook, that post these pictures representing their knife, you know,
and some of the marketing is getting frustrating. I can't remember who it was, but someone was talking about their new knife and they wanted everybody to know that every part of the knife was tempered to at least 50 Rockwell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I get that they're talking about attributes and they're trying to talk about their knife or, you know, whatever the tool is.
Mm-hmm.
But saying every part of your knife is 50 Rockwell on a production knife is not unlike saying 100% of my water is wet. Yeah, it's we're getting to the point where people are struggling to find stuff that they can market.
Yeah, I believe that.
And the one tool option is just it's a marketing ploy.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. I agree with that as well. So, I don't know. I mean, I understand your frustration, Robbie, but I kind of chop it up to it's like, all right, this is just a conversation that is for the sake of having a conversation. It really doesn't have any meaning. And I think in the evolution of – and we've talked about this too – in the evolution of being a woodsman or outdoorsman and, you know, I think that people sometimes just want to talk about it instead of go out there and do it. And I've been guilty of that. I've been guilty of not being able to get out there and practice my skills and do some stuff, you know, just because life gets busy. But I do try to get. I have got to the point where, like, you know what, I'm not even going to waste my time talking about stuff that's just silly. You know, I was talking to Madison the other day. He made that video about the hunting and the stuff like that and like other skills. And I gotta agree with him on some of that point. It's like we stay focused on these a lot. Well, not we. I'm saying we as a community stay focused on a small percentage of the skill set that are oversaturated and we don't have any conversation about other things, you know? And you know, like one thing that we've talked about is, you know, doing some more jungle stuff, like getting together and wanting to go down there with Joe and everything, or doing something different than what we're used to, just to expand our exposure to different things. Like that's like the next step. Is there a practical application? Not really, because I'm not going to be in the jungle unless I'm in that type of situation. I'm not planning to be in the jungle, but there's the educational and expanding your understanding in the growth factor that we want to focus on. So
one of the first things that hit me was we did a day foraging, a day fishing, a day hunting, and we had set out a trap line. And at the end, by far, we got more caloric value, especially for energy expended, from foraging, followed fairly closely by fishing, and hunting was such a distant third that it's not really worth talking about. But the number of people that put so much energy into hunting and trap lines, when, you know, if you look at energy expended versus calories brought in, unless you really know your stuff and the area, it's very cool, and it's what I would love to shoot a video on, but plain old just boring foraging and fishing were by far more efficient uses of our energy.
And that, yeah, good point.
But it's not as cool. I mean, which one's going to get 100,000 YouTube likes? Setting traps, setting snares, or pointing out where to find grubs?
It's going to be a Swedish fire torch. You know, our sweet, what is it called, Robbie? That Swedish fire stove?
Yeah, you were right.
With the log.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, with a pre torch. with a pre-cut log.
Yeah.
You know. So.
Well, I mean, if you've got shelter on your back, you know, if you brought with you shelter, adequate insulation, a big lighter in your pocket, and a knife on your side, and you know, all pretty much after that, isn't it? Just getting food. You know, you got your pot, you can boil water.
Yeah.
After that, isn't life out there mostly a matter of eating?
Yeah.
That's what your daily struggles are.
Which is the reason I pack a neoprene cooler when I go.
<That's>, Dan loads his Sherpa up with a couple extra Yeti coolers. And...
Yeah. That's why I go out of the country for my trips.
where it's legal to make the 65-year-old female cook for your camp totes.
She was 45 and she came back to help me twice. That was it.
Now, Dan, she looked 45. She was actually 75. The people in those countries actually, you know, don't age as quickly as we do.
Yeah, and so what? She didn't have a backpack. I mean, that rice bag she was using was just fine.
She picked you up every time you slipped on a stump.
Yeah.
Threw you over her shoulder.
She would carry my pack every so often when I got tired. But I still killed a bear.
When are you going back to South America?
September. I'm going to Panama and Argentina next month. And then
are you doing bird hunting or something?
Combination of things. Fishing. A good friend of ours grew up in the Panama Canal Zone. So we're going to Panama with him for a couple of days, do some fishing and some hiking. And then Argentina is beef, wine, possibly a dove shoot. And I'm looking forward to going down and studying the gaucho knives. Which, you know, as you probably know, the gauchos are the South American cowboys. And they have a very specific style of knife that I've been researching lately. And I'm going to go down and check out some firsthand examples.
That'd be very cool.
And Robbie, before you say it, yes, it's much easier to fly myself down there than just buy a few and have them shipped up.
Right, right.
Because this way I can talk firsthand through a translator to the makers.
First hand through a translator. Yep.
I think Robbie wants to go with you. You should take him.
Yeah.
I would. He's just got to grow about 2 inches and get some red hair.
That wasn't very nice, Dan. So mean.
It's not my fault Beth is taller than him.
That's all right. Well, I think, guys, we're getting to the end of the show. We did a little extra show here now that we're back. Maybe I'll split this into two so I can fit it on the website. So, and we're back. We're glad to be back for season 5. And anything else, guys, before we sign off?
All joking aside, I really did kill a bear last week.
We didn't talk about that.
I got some pictures and stuff for they're up on E2E and the Facebook page, the Dogwood Facebook page. But I learned a lot and got to use I got to actually butcher a bear with a long hunter.
Nice. Very nice. We'll get into that the next episode. Yeah. We're running on the 2 hour mark, and
Adam, I want to talk more.
I've already had the wife come down. Yeah, enough about me, less talk about me.
I've gotten death eyes from Alex. I was supposed to take him over to his buddy's house 20 minutes ago.
There we go.
They're young, all right, guys. Got their whole lives.
That's right. All right, guys, if you have any questions or comments, emails at podcast@equipthenore.com, and we'll be back next week. We'll be back on our normal routine, and you guys take care. Be safe, and remember, you're not always prepared. You're never prepared. Thanks.